Hello and welcome to the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast. I'm Connell McCourt, coming to you from the Sports Radio 10 WHB studios here in Kansas City. And the Champions League is back, my friends. What a 2 days of sports. Some amazing goals, some amazing drama, penalties, VAR, red cards, everything. Debut goals. Tottenham got a big win. Chelsea got a good win. Liverpool got a thumping win, same as City. I feel so good at this bat. The only place to hear it is right here on Sports Radio 10 WSB Studios, the Independent Republic of Soccer. Coming to you after every match day of the Champions League. Match day 3 is over. Let's get into it. So with that, I'm going to bring in my good friend, Andreas Sainz. Andreas, welcome back to the podcast. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good. After seeing that tonight, two fantastic days of soccer in the last 2 days there. Match day 3 of the Champions League. Now we know, we're starting to see what some teams are made of. Like some teams that we maybe expected to go a bit further in the competition are starting to look like they're showing some cracks. Some teams that are outperforming what we thought. What have you thought of the tournament so far?
I think we are now, like you said, being able to separate the good teams from the bad teams. Mm-hmm. Not that they're
men
bad
from
teams.
The boys,
yep. Yeah, the men from the boys. Now we have a clearer view of what to expect later. As you said, halfway through, some teams, technically speaking, even if they have a mathematical possibility still to go through, it's highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. And we now see the teams that are dominating. Some teams have won every single game of their group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those guys are primed to go through to the next round.
Absolutely. Well, we might as well just start at Group A then, just to start us off. We'll not be going through it A, B, C, D, when we can just sort of jump from group to group. But, I mean, Group A is a good place to start, I suppose. PSG, away to Bruges. And they're making light work of it against Bruges, just sort of continuing on as we've seen PSG all season. What do you think?
PSG making a statement right there. They started the group stage with a little bit of doubts. Neymar injured, Cavani injured, mm-hmm. and now they're getting everything back together, and now they're flying. They're just beating everybody. They're doing great, I think.
Well, they looked unstoppable tonight. I mean, Kylian Mbappe, look, we've spoken about him before. This guy is going to go right to the very, very top. I mean, whether it'll be at Paris or not, whether he'll move on, I mean, I don't know who's out there's going to offer him more money. I don't know. But hat-trick again tonight, just looking unplayable at the minute. I don't know if PSG are going to go on and eventually win the Champions League, but can you see him sticking around there for forever, Mbappe?
Well, we were talking about earlier too, he's a Paris boy. He's in his mm-hmm. hometown. He has a good team around him right now. He has some of the best players in the world there. I think that as long as PSG wins, not domestic titles, but like international.
See, that's the thing that I'm thinking. Like, could that, like, because I'm thinking that he's going to be the next, I mean, I don't want to say the next Messi or whatever, but that player, that mm-hmm. one player, or two players that are in the top that are fighting to be the best player in the world, I think he's going to be there in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe even before that. Will he be doing that at Paris? Or will the Ligue 1, I don't know of him, I'm sort of denigrating the French division, but do you think that'll satisfy him? Or will it be, look, the top two dogs, Barcelona, Real Madrid, coming in for him? Do you think that'll be enough to turn his head like it has been in the past for other massive players of that ilk?
I think that if Barcelona and Real Madrid continue their Champions League dominance, mm-hmm. He's not going to have a choice but to leave, to go to either a Premier League team or one of the two La Liga giants. Mm-hmm. And that's because, like you said, maybe Ligue 1 will eventually lose its charm for him. Not lose its charm, it's just sometimes you need new challenges to like keep improving yourself too, yeah. Not just plateau. And he doesn't look like he's going to plateau anytime soon. Like, he looks like a star.
Well, and as you said, some of the players that he has around him as well, some of them that we've seen tonight, Di Maria, superb again, involved in nearly every goal. Icardi has, someone we were speaking about earlier, I mean, personal life leaves a bit to be desired, Mr. Icardi, but what a player on his day when he can play. I mean, Inter really missing Icardi at the minute, a player like that at the minute, and he's been doing superb for PSG.
Icardi was probably the best deal PSG made during their buying of players, mm-hmm. because he wasn't wanted at Inter. They almost got him, I think, for free. I think it was
cheap
a loan.
Cheap enough, whatever, if yeah. they did pay for him.
And
yeah.
He is a world-class player. He used to be Inter's captain, Inter's talisman. I one of the top scorers in the club, and he's not even 26 yet.
Yeah.
He's a great player.
The other game in that league, I mean, because Bruges, I mean, I don't really think they were unbeaten coming into tonight, but I can't really see them doing much. Bizarrely, I thought the best player tonight was the goalkeeper, Mignolet. I know someone who you think a lot of, former Liverpool goalkeeper. He pulled off some fantastic saves tonight, but just, I mean, 5-0, when you're coming away from that, it doesn't really look like much. So I can't really see Bruges doing much in the tournament. The other game in that group, Galatasaray and Real Madrid. Now, this was a massive game for Madrid. I can't really understate how big this was for Madrid. And the 1-1-0, I suppose, they got the job done.
The Real Madrid have been limping along for the entire season. Since it began, since they fired Solari, they have been really inconsistent. They've been struggling to find that hunger that defined them. Like, and even the Spanish commentators have been saying, like, Real Madrid, that doesn't look like a team who is hungry to win. Like, they just give every time 100%. In that group, like you said, Bruges, I don't think is going anywhere either. Galatasaray was the one who could maybe challenge the two big ones, Real Madrid and PSG.
Just because of how good they usually are at home.
Yeah. Right?
They're very, very tough to beat at home, which adds a bit more to that Real Madrid victory tonight, the 1-0 away.
It was away. It was in Istanbul, and they came out of, they had just lost this weekend in La Liga, in their domestic league, and they literally came back, got regrouped, and went on to win.
And that's one thing. I've been a big critic of Real Madrid this year, especially because it's hard not to be, how bad they've played, like how unlike themselves they look. And against Real Mallorca at the weekend, they looked like they didn't even try. Like, you can tell when a team is not trying, as we were talking about earlier. You can tell when a team just does not look up for it. Tonight was the opposite. They all looked up for it. Hazard looked hungry. I mean, he skinned the goalkeeper and hit the bar, but he missed the open net technically. But he looked hungry. He was getting himself playing good link-up play. Rodrigo was playing well. So they fought tonight. They really fought and dug deep and got a result. So at least that's something for Zidane to try and build on.
And even a player who has been criticized right from the beginning, as soon as he came to Madrid, really, Thibaut Courtois, today was one of the better games that he has played for Real Madrid. He really did save them. Early in the game, he stopped two or three shots that were
Adone up front.
It was like almost a clear opportunity. Like, you knew it was more likely for him to score than to miss, and Courtois had some great saves.
And that's something that, look, he has big shoes to fill, whether the Real Madrid fans or hierarchy appreciated it or not. You and I are both big fans of Keylor Navas. He had big shoes to fill, and tonight hopefully that'll be the start of him filling those.
Keylor Navas doing great in PSG, by the way, too. Clean sheet today.
Yep. The Group B. Group B has a bit of a different dynamic to it, because when we both came, I think both of us just predicted Spurs and Bayern to be sailing straight through, not really any sort of hindrance from the other two teams. We've seen some. I mean, Olympiacos got a draw with Tottenham. We've seen some sort of sticks in the mud there. Tonight, Olympiacos played against Bayern. And Bayern ended up winning the game 3-2. What did you think of the game?
Bayern did not cruise through this game. Bayern struggled a little bit. Lewandowski came to save them at the end. And Olympiacos has pleasantly surprised me, too. They have put a challenge on Tottenham. They put a challenge on Bayern Munich. They did lose to Red Star Belgrade, but other than that, that is a really close group. Any one of those, Tottenham, Red Star, and Olympiacos, any one of those three could potentially qualify.
Bayern Munich, when I watched them, like when I've watched them this whole season, Lewandowski, honestly, I don't know if people agree with this or not, he looks as sharp as I've ever seen him. And he's in his 30s now. He's not a young pup anymore. 21 goals this year for club and country already. And it's not even the end of October yet. I mean, what's that going to be at the end of the season? 21 goals for club and country. And despite all that, I think Lewandowski kind of papering over the cracks a bit at Bayern Munich, sort of, it's all going great in here, because I think they have problems at the back. Centre back especially. They had Lucas Hernandez was taken off injured, stretchered off. He is looking like he's going to need surgery. They've already lost Schüle at the start of the year, done his ACL. And Javi Martinez, who can kind of be used as cover there at centre-back, was also taken off, injured for Tolisso. So they have a bit of trouble there at the back, Madrid or Bayern Munich. And I think Lewandowski is sort of, because he's playing so out of his mind, so because he is playing so well, he's kind of papering over those cracks and still getting Bayern over the line when it looks like they're not really going to be picking up points.
And you wonder, how long can Lewandowski keep this up? Like, he's a world-class player, nobody doubts it, but like you said, he's in his 30s already. Like, that doesn't mean anything, mm-hmm. but usually when you're playing 2 games, 3 games per week, it'll catch up to you. Now he's fresh, preseason, right?
He just looks so... I can't believe how sharp he actually looks. Yeah. Just at this stage of his career, and it's not nowhere near the greatest Bayern side that he's ever played in. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, is that what's happening? Is he papering over the cracks? Do Bayern kind of need some reinforcements in there?
Bayern for sure need at least a centre back. Like you said, Sule is done for the season mm-hmm. almost. He tore his ACL, one mm-hmm. of the most horrible injuries. Lucas Hernandez hurt his ankle. And he was the most expensive signing that they mm-hmm. had brought. Like, really, they needed him to stay healthy.
Hummels is going back to Dortmund.
Yeah, Hummels left. Now they have, I believe, 2 center backs who are still fit to play, Boateng and maybe Alaba. They can put him in there sometimes. But
and with Martinez coming off as mm-hmm. well, sort of just it's just another number, because he's a good guy for that, good utility player that mm-hmm. can sort of slot in there. We've seen him do it before, but just a bit worrying for and especially how tight the Bundesliga is at the minute. All those teams in and around there are all sort of on the same points. So some of these teams, I think, can cause Bayern some problems. Anyway, I mean, let's just see what happens. The other game in that group was, the complete opposite, absolute walkover for Spurs, 5-0.
Yeah, finally, they woke up, right? Finally, mm-hmm. This resembled more the Tottenham of last season, where they went to the finals of the Champions League, than the mm-hmm. one we've been seeing since the season began. Finally, you can see things are clicking. What I noticed the most was that a lot of the players were happy. Like, they were smiling. They were helping each other out. And that's very important. Earlier the games, it was a bit confusing.
What do you think the problem has been at Tottenham?
I think you need to refresh some faces sometimes. Not necessarily anyone is doing anything bad. It's just every cycle ends. Maybe it's Pochettino's time to step down. I'm not saying it's his fault that anything of this has happened. It's just
he doesn't look happy. He doesn't look happy to me, honestly. Anytime I see him in, no Spurs fans would like to hear that. Like, but anytime you see him in a press conference after games, he doesn't look happy. Even last night, I mean, I suppose there hasn't been too much to be happy about recently, the way they've been performing and the results they've been getting. But even after the game last night, he was asked by just in the mix owner and at the presser afterwards, he was asked about how did his team play the way he wants them to play, and he's still saying no. I mean, they won 5-0. They won 5-0, and they didn't play the way you want them to play. I don't know. It was just a bit bizarre. I thought it's just sounded like a guy that's not really happy in his job. And with all the stuff that's been coming out about, look, we know Tottenham's transfer policy. We know they don't like to spend a lot of money on a lot of players. They have been doing it a bit more recently, but I think that's just because they've been under a lot of pressure from their fans. But I don't know, it just seems like something's not right at Tottenham this year. I don't know what it is. I can't really put my finger on it. And there's been a lot of rumours and stuff out there, but whether you read into those or not is another thing. But just something doesn't look right there. And if they don't win a trophy this year, I can't see hot property like Pochettino sticking around for too long.
Yeah, or Harry Kane or Christian Eriksen. And I think that has a little bit to do, too. A lot of players on the contract, end of their contracts, maybe disgruntled with the club itself. Maybe they feel like they deserve a raise. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wanted to leave and the president didn't let them leave. And I don't think it's so much they're playing professionally or going to training or having a bad attitude. It's just they're human beings at the end of the day. And
like, it sounds crazy because some of the numbers are astronomical, especially to people like me and you. I mean, like, we'll never ever see these types of figures ever. Harry Kane's on, £200,000 a week? And maybe he's not happy because he probably sees himself as the best striker in the world, which he probably has perfect right to do. I mean, he's in the conversation. So he's probably thinking, pay me like the best striker in the world. If you want me to play here, pay me as much as the best striker in the world plays and I'll play here. So, I mean, I kind of have some sort of sympathy when it comes to that. But look, you're a professional at the end of the day. I mean, you're being paid hundreds of thousands of pounds, dollars, whatever, to do something that we'd all give our left arm to do. So you're still expecting to show up, but that you could be right, that could be a problem.
It weighs on them. Like, it has to weigh on them, on their family. They might not know where they're going to live next year. Mm-hmm. So that has a psychological effect on these guys. And even in the coach, because the coach doesn't know who he's going to have next year mm-hmm. to work with. And in theory, he was supposed to be there for a really long time, be the base of the new project, and he seems a little disappointed, like you said. Something is going on that he hasn't made it public because he's a good professional, mm-hmm. but something's going on there.
Under the surface there, mm-hmm, yeah.
That they just need to work through.
One person that seems to be the exact opposite, seems to, like, everything's pulling up roses at the minute, is Pep Guardiola. Moving into Group C, City had another fantastic win, just looking like the world-class team that they are at the minute. But before we get on to City, how bad have Atalanta been?
They have been very disappointing, to be honest.
Like, coming into this, I remember you tipping them. You thought that they were going to be one of the teams that shocked everyone?
I thought so. I thought they were going to go through. They could go through. The group is really close. Only Manchester City has a perfect score. Mm-hmm. The other two is 4 points for Dinamo Zagreb, 4 points for Shakhtar Donetsk. Atlanta has no points. And they actually started winning this game against Manchester City too. They were winning 1-0 and then just the avalanche came and mm-hmm. Man City scored 5 goals. But I don't judge them against Man City. I think Manchester City is one of the favorites to win the entire thing.
Definitely.
So I'm not going to pit Atalanta against them. I'm going to pit Atlanta against Dinamo Zagreb and Shakhtar Donetsk, who they will have to compete. And I think that Atalanta being like the new boys in the Champions League, they haven't been here in a while.
Yeah.
They're going to get their bearings together. Now they know. They already played the first 3 games. They now know what's going on, how the Champions League is, how those midweek games are. And now they'll be more used to it. And I think they're going to be much better than, because they have a quality. The quality they have.
Yeah, it's just that sort of inexperience in the Champions League. Because you're right, that does happen. Players haven't been there before. They don't really know what it takes. They don't know what it's like on a Champions League night. And next thing, they're in Manchester with some of the best players in the world running at them. So anything can happen. One of the best players in the world at the minute, in my opinion, is definitely Raheem Sterling. Another hat-trick for him. I know you were a bit gutted because he's not your captain anymore in your Champions League.
My fantasy team.
Your fantasy team. So, but a hat-trick again. I mean, this boy is hot to trot.
He is on fire. He's probably the most on-form player right now of every, and Lewandowski. Him mm-hmm. and Lewandowski right there. But Sterling has been the soul of this Manchester City team. Mm-hmm. He's been carrying them. As far as Sterling goes, Manchester City will go. If he keeps this up, I'd really see them going really, really deep into the tournament. They have a great team. Despite that center back injury, Aymeric Laporte.
That's one thing I was a bit... I mean, it doesn't really say much. I think Guardiola, when it comes to man management, I mean, obviously we only know so much that we're limited to what we see, but that... from what you hear from players that have played under him and journalists that sort of have observed him up close, he's a very good man manager. Very good at you know, getting the best out of players, doing whatever he needs to do to get players to react to him. So I was thinking of a player like John Stones, who is a centre-back by trade. I mean, no matter what you think of him, obviously Guardiola thinks something of him, but it came to starting tonight. And he played Fernandinho, a centre midfielder, in a centre back, and left John Stones on the bench. Now, Stones had to eventually come on because of an injury, but what does that really say to Stones if he's a centre back and just a centre midfielder starting a centre back ahead of him?
It's one of two things. Either that Guardiola wants him to either put more effort in training or get like his pride.
Yeah,
like,
there's a reason he's doing it, obviously. Because mm-hmm.
He is the natural centre-back. Like, that's his position. Fernandinho is a holding midfielder. He's not a natural centre-back. From what I have heard, too, Fernandinho is a jewel to work with. Like, he's one of the best teammates, one of the mm-hmm. best players you can coach. Mm-hmm. He's always willing to help the team. So that may be a reason, too, why Fernandinho's there. Fernandinho's a leader.
Top pro, like.
Yeah, he could. Maybe he needed that leadership back there, that yep. calmness. Maybe his whole team works better when Fernandinho's there. And he sees it in practice. He knows more than us. And that I think John Stones is not in the best moment right now. When they bought him from Everton, they had really high expectations for him. And he's still really young. I think he can still come back and, you know, be the important player that he was meant to be.
Because he's a good ball playing defender. I mean, people don't like him. There's a lot of hate out there for John Snow. He is a decent player with the ball at his feet. Sometimes he takes a bit too many risks, but I don't think Guardiola minds that. I think he sort of likes players to express themselves, try and bring the ball out of the back and keep it on the deck. And Stones does do that. It's just probably a bit of inexperience again. Like, he's still young and he's going to learn eventually. I'm just wondering if he can turn into that player that everybody expected him to be when he left Everton.
If some coach can turn him into that, it would be Guardiola. Pep Guardiola.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely agree. The other game in that group was huge. I mean, maybe we didn't really know how huge before we came into tonight and we saw Atlanta get beat again. But it looks like this is the slugout now for to see who gets that second position going through between Shakhtar and Zagreb. And looking at this game from that point of view, it looks like a great point for Zagreb, for me, in Ukraine, going to Shakhtar, getting the points. And you know what? From what I've seen of the game, I just seen the extended highlights. They looked well worth it. Like, they have some really good players, Zagreb. Orsic and Dani Olmo scored both the goals. Huge, huge goals for, especially out there in Ukraine, where it's tough to win.
Yeah, it is Zagreb's second place to lose. They will have a hard time. I am sure Shakhtar Donetsk and Atalanta will give them
their tough games.
They will not just bow down and just surrender. They're going to try to, because they still possibly can. And remember that in the third place goes to Europa League too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that second place that they're fighting for. Even if they're completely disqualified from going through to the in the Champions League, they would still want that Europa League.
Yeah.
They want to stay playing. So these games, they're not going to quit. They're going to keep trying. It's going to be a really interesting group.
The fourth group, Group D, is a bit... well, I mean, I suppose we kind of know what way it's shaped. It's one of those groups that it's already seems to have started taking shape. Juventus and Lokomotiv Moscow. Lokomotiv actually took the lead at Juventus, and Juventus came back 2-1. What did you think?
Yeah, Juventus didn't look so great, to be honest, in that game. Lokomotiv did start winning. Lokomotiv, even they have already won a game in the group. They beat Bayer Leverkusen. They did good, and Dybala had to come in at the really late in the second half, scored 2 goals in 10 minutes to be able to give those 3 points to Juve. And I thought that Juve and Atletico de Madrid were going to just cruise it, go to the next round. But even Atleti have been struggling as well domestically and in Champions League. They're second in the group and they have the same amount of points as Juve, but you can tell that it is not the same team as last year, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. They might just get it going still because they still got tons and tons of quality there, but they have not clicked yet. They haven't gotten where they can get to.
The Juventus, I'm glad you brought up Dybala. Like, I don't think there's been a player that we've seen such a turnaround from this season since. I mean, maybe Higuain. We could argue Higuain. But Dybala, the change in Dybala since Sarri has came in too. Let's remember, at the start of the season, there was talk of Dybala leaving. He was close to leaving. He was linked with Man United and then linked to Spurs. And from what I read, the only reason the Spurs deal fell through was something to do with image rights, or they couldn't quite agree terms, personal terms. So he was on his way out the door, and Sarri had always said at the start of the season, like, he's a player, he can work his way back in, blah, blah, blah. So he's worked his way back in, another double tonight for him. His first goal was a screamer, second he just was in the right place at the right time. And we've seen that Sarri seems to be a slave to the 4-3-3. Like, that's what he's always tried to play, even at Chelsea and stuff. But now at Juventus, he seems willing to experiment. Juventus have been a bit stop-start this year in the league and in the Champions League. We haven't really seen the best of them. He's been sort of tinkering with his team, trying to work out what the best team is. And he played 4-2-3-1 tonight, or 4-3-1-2, sorry, tonight. And with a number 10 sitting in behind Ronaldo and Dybala. And Dybala has flourished since then. I mean, we've just seen him just sort of... He's worked his way back into the team, and now he looks like he's the one leading the line now.
He did work his way back into the starting 11. And Sarri specifically asked for Higuain to stay as well, because he had worked with him in the past in Napoli, and he knows how good Higuain can be. Mm-hmm. And like you say, I am so pleasantly surprised with Higuain.
Absolute revelation this year, Higuain.
Nobody wanted him last year. They kept wanting to get rid of Higuain, and I think he came back with like something to prove, and he's there to stay.
And 10 pounds later, too.
Yeah,
I mean, he looks quicker. So slight at the minute, so quick, so sharp, just that bit. Like, we didn't see any of that at Chelsea when he came to the Premier League. And it's such a shame too, because he really could have been a wonderful player in the Premier League. But he's went back to Italy. It seems to be that's where he feels comfortable, because look what he did for Napoli. Look what we've seen him do for Juventus in the past. And now again, he just looks to be clicking, getting back in the gear. So hopefully he continues it anyway.
Yeah.
The one player that hasn't really got off to a great start at Juventus is Matthias de Ligt. Again tonight for the goal. One ball over the top. He jumps up with the defender, and the ball goes over the top of them, and the striker's in, takes his goal. So is it taking him a bit long just to find his feet, or what do you think the problem is?
I think he's got quality. I don't think he was a one-year wonder at Ajax. I do, for now, like, I think it's too much expectations for him. I think he still needs to grow a little bit more mentally. He's already a monster.
Different
physically.
League as well, yeah. Sort of getting used to playing with different
Different language.
Different language, I'd say. Yeah, yeah. So it may just take
different
him
coach, different style. Like, in Ajax, it's very straightforward. Like, it's like a lot similar to Barcelona.
And that's all he knew as well, because that was his
team. Where he grew
up.
He
came right up, captain at 19 or something ridiculous like that, kept under the national team. That's all he has known to play, and now he's being thrown into one of the giants of football, the old lady in Turin. And it just, I think you might be right, we're just expecting a bit too much of him.
And it's a little bit, I think, not his fault, but he chose this challenge for himself. Like, he chose to go to Juventus. It's not that half of the teams in Europe wanted to sign him. Everybody wanted De Ligt to go to their team. Barcelona wanted De Ligt to go to their team. Juve, Real Madrid.
Well,
yeah, yeah.
Everybody
lined up and begged him. He chose Juventus. For me, obviously, Barcelona fan, I would have told him, go to Barcelona, because it's the most similar playing style to Ajax. Yeah. And he would have probably hit the ground running, like his buddy.
The whole Johan Cruyff.
Yeah, like his buddy De Jong. De Jong is thriving in Barcelona. He has played more games than everyone else in that team. He is Valverde's go-to guy. He has started more games than anybody. Obviously, Messi has been hurt, so that's why.
I mean, we'll get on to Frankie De Jong and Barcelona after. The other game in that group, Atleti and Leverkusen. Now, Atleti, I think we were talking a bit about Atleti off-air just before we came on. What do you think is the biggest difference this year? I'll let you say, and then I'll say what I think.
I think it's changed a lot. Even though a lot of the players are the same, they still have many fresh faces getting used to the team. They lost their star, their key player. As much as good as Diego Costa is and Saúl, and you can say all you want, Griezmann was the man.
That's the big miss. Griezmann, I mean, obviously, it's probably, I mean, everybody was probably screaming at their radios listening to that when I said the biggest thing they've been missing. That is it. It is Griezmann. I mean, they did lose Diego Godin as well. Obviously, massively influential in the team. Older head at the back. But it is, Griezmann's the biggest difference. How have you seen Griezmann settle in at Barcelona?
It's hard to settle in at Barcelona no matter who you are. Even great players like Thierry Henry, when they went to Barcelona, they didn't hit the ground running and just started playing right away. It took them some time to get used to it, especially players who have to go to another position than the one they're used to. Griezmann is used to doing in Atletico Madrid what Messi does in Barcelona, which is control the tempo of the game, make those passes, make those runs. Like, the game would go through Griezmann.
And that is exactly what Atleti are missing now. When I was watching the game this week, the last match day as well, it's the exact same thing. Like, everything used to go through Griezmann. Griezmann was a goal scorer as well, of course, but which João Felix, I'm sure, who they've brought in to replace Griezmann. He is a goal scorer, but he's not that Griezmann type player. He's not that sort of fulcrum that everything goes through. Griezmann is the one that was dropping back into getting closer to the midfielders, bringing them into the game, spreading the play, opening it up a bit more, creating chances and stuff. But João Felix isn't really, that's not him.
And I think that João Felix will get there eventually. He will be as good as Griezmann, maybe better, who knows. He is a really talented player, but he's a kid. I don't think he's 20 yet.
No,
and
he's not.
And he, again, like, the league has a lot of expectations on him. He probably expects a lot of himself as well. He wants to be the best, but it takes time, you know. You're not born being great. Even Messi had to learn from Ronaldinho and Eto'o. Like, he had all these great players helping him go up. I think you mentioned Godin, and I just want to... Godin is a great guy. He's a great leader. I think just personally that he left because he knew that he wasn't going to be able to start as much because of the high competition and the level. Because Atletico, the problem has not been their defense. They have been doing great on
Notoriously,
defense.
I mean, Simeone always has great defenses.
They have one of the, if not the best goalie in the world. They have a really solid block of players who are all willing to come back and defend and work as a unit. They just need to get that flair going for the goals. And
that's it. I mean, I know it's too simplistic to say you take one player out of a team and everything changes like that. But with Griezmann coming in, just the difference in like that final ball, that link-up ball isn't there. I mean, they're probably going to need another left foot, maybe Thomas Lemar. They probably need someone like that who came off the bench, and actually when he came on, I think he won the game for Atleti. Because Morata has been poor. Morata's second goal of the season. Atleti won 1-0, by the way, against Bayer Leverkusen. Morata with the goal. And it was a good goal. He took his goal well, actually, to be fair. But a wee stat for you. That's the first goal that Morata scored in the Champions League since 2017. The last goal he scored was at the same stadium for Chelsea against Atleti Madrid. Like, that's how long he's been sort of off the boil for. Because Morata, as we used to remember when he was at Atleti, was goal scoring machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, with Lamar coming in, I think they're probably hoping that he can sort of fill some sort of Griezmann's boots. They're helping out with João Felix and stuff as well. But Leverkusen, on the other hand, they've had a dreadful season. They were beat 3-0 at the weekend by Frankfurt. I thought they looked much better against Atleti. I thought they defended well. They were in it right until the very end, right until the end of the game. So I think they're out, though, I must say.
Yeah, it'll be hard for them. Their goal will now be Europa League. That's for sure. Beat out Lokomotiv Moscow for that third place. I think a lot of teams, when they get to the Champions League, to Europe, it hurts them a lot in the league, and it changes a lot their dynamics of the season. And if they're not used to it, like a Real Madrid or a Barcelona who go through this every season, mm-hmm. it's hard to get used to this difference. And Bayer Leverkusen have been here before, but I just feel like it was too much. They don't have that deep of a team to be able to compete on two fronts, and it's showing with this team. They gave Atletico Madrid a really hard time. It's not that they just laid back and was like, okay, just score.
Mm-hmm.
They have, and Juve had a tough time beating Leverkusen too, but it's hard.
Yeah.
That's
the first four. That's the first four down, Group A to D. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back with Group E through H as well. And you're listening to the Independent Republic of Soccer on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Every weekday on Sports Radio 810, tune in to hear Kansas City's favorite local lineup. At 6 a.m., wake up with a Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati. At 10, it's The Zone with Jason Anderson. Now at 2, get into the program with Soren Petro. And wrap up your day on Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe. Kansas City's hometown sports station. Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hello and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast. I'm Colin McCourt, joined again by Andreas Steins. And Andreas, we only have four of the groups to go. Probably done A to D, and now E to G. So let's just get straight into it. E. And that was Salzburg-Napoli and Liverpool-Genk. Yeah?
Yep. If you did not see the Napoli game, I would recommend you just watching the highlights if you have not, because those Mertens goals were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That guy scores some of the craziest goals I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
The first one especially, when I was watching the play go, I was like, okay, it's going out. And then he just, out of nowhere, puts it in the top corner. That guy is fantastic.
And in scoring those two goals, he actually took over Diego Maradona as
top goal
scores for Napoli. The only person above him now, I believe, is Marek Hamsik. I think.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. I think so too. But yeah, you can catch me on Twitter as well, Connell_MCC. That's Connell_MCC. Or you can get all your local soccer talk, MLS talk, and even European soccer talk sometimes on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Of course, you can keep downloading these podcasts that me and my good friend Andres will be doing after every match day in the Champions League, and maybe even some Premier League and Bundesliga and stuff games as the season progresses. But Group E, let's see. So Salzburg-Napoli, as you were talking about the game, Dries Mertens and his two goals, they were two of the three that Napoli needed to beat Salzburg. What did you think about the game in general?
I think it was a tight game. Red Bull have been pretty impressive this campaign. Haaland has been amazing. They even gave Napoli a run for their money. They're looking really good. They're really solid. They have totally a chance to go through to the next round. They're only 3 points behind second place Liverpool. Napoli tops the group with 7 points. Poor Genk, I don't see them really going anywhere. They have 1 point. They might not even be able to fight for Europa League anymore. But still, this group is one of the most quality groups. He has three really good teams playing.
And Haaland, as you were just talking about there, he is the star. He is the standout star of the tournament this year, as far as I'm concerned. Alfinga Haaland's son, Erling Haaland, he scored in his first three Champions League games, the first player to do that since Karim Benzema, I believe. And he scored six goals in his first three games, two in each game. I mean, that's the first player ever to do that. So, as good as he is being for Salzburg this year, and I'm sure they're loving how good he is, I can't see him being at Red Bull Salzburg, easy for me to say. Next year, what do you think?
I don't think so either. I think the top clubs are going to come knocking in Red Bull's door. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, not only him, a lot of really good players that are making Sabitzer, the team making the team work. But Haaland, like you said, he's the star. He's really young. And there have already been rumors that Real Madrid have been linked to him, trying to get him to come to Real Madrid.
And Salzburg were unlucky as well. I mean, as you said, Napoli are a quality side. Salzburg put it up to them. I think the difference in the end, honestly, was just the old cat, Carlo Ancelotti. The coach. Just been here before, been there, done it, wore the T-shirt. He's been through every imaginable circumstance you can think of in the Champions League. This was just another one, 2-2. Makes a substitution, brings on Insigne, and Insigne scores the goal, it wins the game. I mean, that can't be, surely, look, luck happens in every game, but we're quick enough to criticise coaches when they don't make these decisions, so when he actually does make a decision and that player scores the winner, I think we'll have to give Ancelotti a bit of credit there.
And I think Napoli being first in that group has a lot to do with Ancelotti being one of the best coaches in the world, if not the best, because with a team that is not regarded as a top team in Europe, like, look at they're beating the champions of last year in the group. They're ahead of Liverpool in that group. They beat Liverpool in the game that they played earlier in the group stage. Mm-hmm. So Ancelotti has been a really big reason for that. The team is playing great. You can see it in the team. You can see they're hungry. You can see they're happy with each other. There's not a lot of conflict. And that has a lot to do with how good of a coach Ancelotti is, how straightforward of a person is. From what I understand, he would just talk to a player, great man manager. Like you said, he has been there as a player, been there as a coach, won everything as a player, won everything as a coach.
Yep.
So he has been there and back. So these guys are just in for the ride.
And it was two very fun teams to watch as well. Salzburg and Napoli both played great stuff and was just attacking football the whole time. And one of the better games of the entire match day, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The other game was a bit more one-sided. Liverpool 4-1 at Genk, away to Genk. I mean, I suppose we didn't really give Genk much of a chance coming into this. They got the one goal, but at the end, just because of bad, poor defending by Milner, he should have just put it into Rose Ed. But Liverpool just looking like quality again, not even getting to the second gear, and four goals against Genk.
And I think still Liverpool are not, fully Liverpool.
They are like they were last year.
They are not the team that they were last year. You could see it last weekend in their league game. I know it's Champions League, but I'm going to touch on it a little bit. Manchester United gave them a run for their money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Manchester United team that has not been good for a while now. And Manchester United actually dominated Liverpool for the longest time during that game. They lost because, again, opinion, the coach made a wrong choice in taking out Rashford. Because as soon as Rashford came out, Liverpool goes and scores. Anyway, long story short, Liverpool is not who they used to be. I don't know if it's that they're tired from last season or they just don't know what else to
They're still sitting at the top of the league. And domestically, they're still... I can understand what you mean. Yeah, they don't quite look as free-flowing as they did last year. But I think, if anything, I think Mane looks better this year than he did last year. Salah maybe not looking as great, but Liverpool are going to be right there. I mean, finalists again this year, if not winning it again.
Best player in the team is Sadio Mane, probably by a lot. Like, he's a beast. I just think that since you mentioned the league, they are top of the league, but some of those games that they have won have been very lucky, but not necessarily lucky. They just won the champions way. They won even if they're worse.
Grounded out.
They weren't the better team, but they still won. And you have to. That's how you win the league.
Yeah,
teams have to learn to do that.
You have to win ugly. I mean, not every game you're going to be tippy-tappy football winning 7-6 5. I mean, you have to get those results. You have to grind them out. And that point at Man United, I get what you mean. United were actually the better team on the day, I believe. But I think when it comes to a game like that, a grudge game like that, City against Liverpool, I mean, whoever, Celtic against Rangers, Boca against River, it's going to be the form goes out the window, for the most part. Form goes out the window. This is it was at Old Trafford. It was kind of, Solskjaer was under a lot of pressure. And to be fair to United, I'm not going to take anything away from Man United because they did do well that day. They pushed Liverpool and made them play a way that they didn't want to. So, deserved of their point. That for 3 points again tonight, I'm sure Jurgen Klopp's just sort of, that's it, going through the motions, looking forward to the real test. They play Tottenham at the weekend. Tottenham had a great win tonight, as we've already discussed. Liverpool have also had a great win. That makes for a mouthwatering tie at the weekend.
It will be really good. Yeah, it'll be a fantastic game.
And it'll show us how far Tottenham have actually come as well, because it's hard to tell at the minute. I mean, don't get me wrong, Tottenham have been poor domestically and then had that thumping win in the Champions League. So I think it's going to be much more of a measuring stick, seeing how they do against Liverpool.
This will be their measuring stick for sure. This will let everybody else know how much Tottenham have actually improved. Because like we said before, I think they're waking up. You could sort of tell that they're starting to breathe again, and we'll see. This game is going to be really good.
Group F, let's see. Inter, I suppose, a massive win at home to Dortmund. They needed that win at home to Dortmund. They win 2-0. I mean, I wouldn't want to say must win. I mean, I suppose it kind of was a must win in a way. I mean, it wouldn't be, they weren't out if they didn't win it by any stretch of the imagination, but you're thinking for morale, for team, for the feel-good factor you need in the team, and I think a win like that against a decent Dortmund team, it will certainly do wonders for that.
And these guys, their previous two games in the group, it was not that they were run over by the other team. Barca barely scraped the win against them. They let Slavia Praha tied them in like the last minute of the game. So now this was their, okay, we really need to step forward. No more mistakes like we had done in the past two games, and they did. Conte probably talked to them, said, listen, guys, we need to finish those games. We need to focus, concentrate. Like I said, they are a good group. They are a good team. They gave Barcelona a tough time in Barcelona. They beat Dortmund, and they're getting used to it too. They have a lot of fresh faces. Lautaro Martinez is doing great. He's probably their best player this season. But I think they're clicking. Conte will get that team going.
Well, I think with Conte coming in, I think a lot of people have been, from journalists and stuff that have been reading, a lot of the onus has been put on the league, domestic play, Serie A. And you can see that they haven't lost a game this year in Serie A. They're one of the only teams that haven't. They're second in the league right now behind Juventus, just a point behind them. And a lot of people thought that Conte was going to, the league is the bread and butter, will not really put much into the Champions League, will sort of go for this. So to see how much they wanted it tonight, how much it actually mattered to them tonight, it was a bit refreshing. It made me feel a bit better about Inter, because that second goal Candreva scored, it was at that stage Dortmund were pressing, just trying to get an equaliser, and they caught Dortmund on the attack. The relief around the San Siro, around Conte, around his back room, you could just see it just lift off their shirt. It was pandemonium when he scored that second goal. The whole place just, you could tell they're all just breathed a collective sigh of relief, with at the same time going crazy because they just went 2-0 up.
And I feel like they finally got over that hump. Mm-hmm. Like they were, because they were playing good. They almost had it. They had the result for the past two games, and they just psychologically,
lots
they needed
of concentration,
that win.
That's
they
it,
needed
yep.
that win. They needed to know that they can win.
Big
they
clean
needed,
sheet
yeah,
too, yep.
Yeah, they needed to know that they can hold on for the 90 minutes, get those 3 points, get it done. Not necessarily fancy, just concentrate. Get it done, go through to the next stage.
The other game in that group, your own team, Barcelona, 2-1 winners away at Slavia Prague. Not really pretty on the eyes, not a really pretty win for Barca. What do you think?
Not a pretty win, but like we were talking about earlier, champions got to win however they can. Mm-hmm. They won away from home, 3 extremely valuable points. They're going to have a tough return. Now they have to play Inter Milan and they have to play Dortmund again. And these two, like you said, Dortmund is no pushover, and Inter, finally, they're over that hump. Psychologically, they'll be much more prepared to face Barcelona on the next go. And I'm sure that they're not going to just tie to Slavia Praha again. I think they're going to get the result, mm-hmm. and that group is going to be way tighter than... It's one of the tightest groups. Barcelona has 7 points, Inter has 4 points, and Dortmund has 4 points. So anything can happen
here.
It's
all to play for right there, yep. really. I mean, going into these last couple of games, like that was a massive win for Inter tonight. I believe the next game Inter will be at Dortmund. Mm-hmm. Then what a big game that is automatically
for
there,
both of those guys. Mm-hmm. Because even Slavia Praha still see themselves as having a chance, mm-hmm. at least to go to Europa League. They totally have a chance. They just need one or two good results, and they're there. It'll be tough, obviously, but they can do it, and that's the beauty of the Champions League. Like, almost until the very end, every team feels like they have a chance, and mm-hmm. they're gonna try. There's no easy games in Champions League.
And while we're on Barcelona, I suppose your boy Messi breaking more records again, 15th consecutive season that he has scored in the Champions League, the first player ever to do so.
Messi, fantastic, once in a generational player, you know. Good for him. Many more records we're going to keep breaking.
It seems like every time he plays now, there's some sort of record that's being broken. Like, it's hard to compartmentalize all those. Easy for me to say again.
Yeah, and it's just he's been playing for so long now, and you don't even... Messi is like a Barcelona. Like, he's been here forever, and he's just going to keep breaking records and records. He's just that good.
He doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon, does he?
And he won't.
Frankie de Jong, that you were mentioning earlier, a player, the opposite, you said, of Matthias de Ligt, who has seemed to have struggled at Inter. You say he's hit the ground running at Barcelona?
Hit the ground running. He has been the player that has started the most games for Barcelona. He is Valverde's go-to guy.
And he's playing the three in the midfield then?
He's playing with three in the midfield. He has played in the holding midfield. He has played as a right, as a left. Mm-hmm. And he has done good in all of them. I personally think that his best position is right.
On the right, yes.
Yeah, in the midfield and not as a holding mid. He needs someone behind him cleaning up. Not that he can't.
The likes of a Busquets or...
Sort of. Maybe better than Busquets, but yeah, someone who would clean up and do more. He's still a physical player. He will run up and down.
So you like Arthur?
Arthur's good. I think Arthur's a good complement to both of those guys because Arthur is that Brazilian guy. He's really smart playing. He has that good quick feet to get out of some trouble really fast and mm-hmm. then maybe go on the break. And that they need that type of flair. Arthur reminds me a little bit of Xavi, maybe with a little bit more flair in terms of the passing. He may not have the same accuracy as Xavi, but they play like the same position. They like playing with the ball. They mm-hmm. like moving around. They're short. They're not necessarily this imposing physical player, but he can turn in a second and just change the play completely. I think Barca's good, and they've
also still they've got Rakitic they can bring on. They've still got Arturo Vidal they can bring off the bench. I mean, it's not as if they're hurting for players to bring in there. So De Jong is obviously holding on to the spot.
Yeah, and one thing I read about De Jong was that he has been breaking a bunch of records in the medical department with like resistance and running mm-hmm. and how fast they recover because they measure all that stuff. And mm-hmm. the Barca technical staff are in love with that kid. He has broken almost all of their records, so he's really good for the future. That guy is going to be amazing.
Let's see. Let's see how it works out. The Group G, second last group now, RB Leipzig, Zenit, Lyon and Benfica. Leipzig, I'm going to talk a bit about Leipzig because, honestly, I wrote it earlier on Twitter. They're my favorite team to watch in Europe. To watch them playing football, they play such good football. Nagelsmann just has them playing great football. Like we've known that he can play, and has done previously at Hoffenheim and now with Leipzig. They have so much talent all over the field, and every player seems to know they're all on the same wavelength. Yep. Every player knows what the other player's going to do, where the runs are going to be made. And look, it's not as if it's not all toe tappy, step over, you know, sort of big time Charlie type football. A lot of it's just simple ball, simple. Playing it round the opposition, and it's great to watch. And what a team too, like Timo Werner doesn't stop scoring. They've just got, as I said, talent all over the field, and that was a big win for them tonight, 2-1 at home to Zenit.
Yeah, and I think their best attribute is, like you said, they're a great team. They are all working together for the same objective. They know what they're doing. Like mm-hmm. they
so
don't
organized,
leave anything
like,
to chance.
They're so organized. Everyone on the pitch knows their job.
Mm-hmm. They know exactly their role. They know what they're supposed to do. They know that if X player makes this run, they should either let the ball go. Like the first goal, the striker didn't even look back. And when he was past the ball, he let the ball go between his legs mm-hmm. without even having to look back to see if the guy was mm-hmm. there because he knew that his teammate was going to be there.
Yep.
He kept making the run. They gave them the through ball, and it was the first goal.
That was Lima. Yeah, that's right. The first goal that they scored. And what about the goals in this game? The defender's goal for Zenit St. Petersburg, the Ratowski or whatever, butchering his name. Yeah. What a strike that was. And then the strike by Sabitzer at the end for Leipzig, some unbelievable goals. In the whole match day, whole Champions League, the goals in this match day have been unbelievable.
Watch the highlights, guys.
Absolutely.
You will not regret it.
And this game was no exception. Like, I mean, quality goals all around.
Yeah, and this group particularly is the tightest group of all of the groups. Mm-hmm. This is how it is. Leipzig is first with 6 points. Zenit is second with 4 points, tied with Lyon, who is third with 4 points too. And then Benfica has 3 points, which we will probably talk about that game now, that they needed those three points.
So that's it. So Benfica were at home to Lyon. And as you said, they needed that 3 points going into, because it's the crunch time now of the Champions League. 3 games in, there's only 3 games left for some of these teams. So this was they needed to make a statement, needed to get their first 3 points, and they've done it, to be fair to them.
No more room for error now. Mm-hmm. Like, they really needed to get it going. And for me, it was more that Lyon lost those 3 points than Benfica, you know, earned them. But Benfica did what teams do. They won, even they didn't play the best. And Lyon had the chance to go to the top of the group. They played really well too. They are finally
and they were unlucky as well. The goalkeeper for the second goal.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a bit of a howler from the goalkeeper. Don't get me wrong, the Benfica, I mean, the striker done very well to put it in. Like, but it was, as you said, Lyon. They kind of gave it up. They kind of gave the points away rather than Benfica.
They lost the points more than Benfica. But obviously, Benfica got the points, but it was more Lyon. I expected them to go with the points.
They forfeited it for sure, and that game ended 2-1. So that is a really tight group to see who's going to get through there. I mean,
even in the goal difference, like,
yeah, they're all it's much of a muchness, really.
Leipzig has 4 goals in favor. Zenit has 5. Lyon has 4, and Benfica has 4. So even if it goes to goal difference, it'll be really hard to see who goes through.
They're all scrapping it out because I think Leipzig are through. Personally, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll have a problem, but between the other three, I think any team can get that second spot, and any team can go to the Europa League as well.
Yep.
Group H, so the last group, then Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia, Lille. Chelsea with, honestly, I think, which may be the win of the whole match day, the most important win for any team in this entire match day. Away to Ajax. Chelsea, I mean, look, they've been touch and go. We don't really know what to expect from Lampard yet. What a win that was away from home. 1-0 away to Ajax. And that puts Chelsea in a great position now.
Yeah, Christian Pulisic with the assist. Lampard has been saying that he wants to get Pulisic going. And hopefully Chelsea have been clicking more and more and more. You could see that young team finally playing as good as they can. And I think Chelsea got, like you said, the most valuable 3 points in the tournament because they beat their direct competition away from home. And that's just, we were talking about it at the first, before the first match day, how important it is for the teams to win their home games in order for them to go through. And if they get any points away from home, it's like
a bonus,
extra positive. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not supposed to get those.
And I'll go ahead and I'll give Lampard the credit because, as I was saying, we give managers enough stick when they don't make these substitutions, when they kind of sit on their hands and don't show good in-game management. Lampard made 2 substitutions tonight, Pulisic and Batshuayi. Pulisic lays on the goal, Batshuayi scores the goal. So you have to give him credit there. He seemed a way that he could exploit Ajax, and it worked.
And those two have really good chemistry because they were together in Dortmund for a while too. So those two click in the Premier League game. Lampard did the same thing. He put in Batshuayi, put in Pulisic. Mm-hmm. Pulisic passes to Batshuayi, Batshuayi scores. Mm-hmm. And this Chelsea team, they look really good.
How good do you think Chelsea are? It's hard to sort of gauge because what a win this is. And they've had some brilliant wins in the Premier League as well. They look very inexperienced, and that transfer embargo as well, I think it's going to hurt them. But if anything, I've read a couple of things online and stuff, a couple of Chelsea fans as well sort of spinning it in a way that this transfer embargo was one of the best things that could have happened to them, because it forced them to play their young players that Chelsea have had forever. The likes of, because let's be honest, if there was this transfer embargo, Roman Abramovich is going to be spending money. He's going to be buying players. There probably wasn't a place for Hudson-Odoi, who we thought was going to go to Munich. Tammy Abraham probably doesn't make his way into the team. Mason Mount, Tomori at the back. These type of players probably wouldn't have got a chance if it would have been, if the transfer embargo wasn't there and they were able to buy players. So, I mean, it's a different sort of spin, different way to look at it, but it certainly seems to be, that's the core, their nucleus of their team at the minute. They seem to be doing okay.
They are, and it's a good thing for England too, because a lot of those players you mentioned are all English players, and I think Lampard wants to get those English players also their opportunity, and the transfer embargo basically was his excuse. He didn't need to go buy anyone and put them over the expensive signing. You get a chance to play, you deserve to play, and you're going to play, and that's what they're doing. you're right. They're very young, very inexperienced. I don't see them as contenders just yet, but this is a bright start. They might not win this year, maybe not even the next, but all of those guys, the Tammy Abrahams, the Mason Mounts, the Hudson Odois, they're all in the early side of 20. They're like 21, 22, mm-hmm. 20 years old.
Even Hudson Odois still only a teen?
Yeah, and he had a horrible injury mm-hmm. last year. He tore his Achilles, I think it was. And those are really hard for you to recover from. And that guy, I don't think he's missed a beat. He's the corner taker for Chelsea. That guy is so fast, so skilled. Now I know why Chelsea begged him to stay. He has bags of ability,
like, definitely. I mean, he can just keep going from strength to strength. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he stays fit.
Hopefully.
And we can actually see the best of him.
Yep.
The other game in that group was Lille at home to Valencia. 1-1. And this was Valencia were leading 1-0, as we'd have seen right up until the 95th minute. Lille equalised. Lille certainly seemed to be the more, putting the more pressure on at that time. They seemed to dominate the game.
Mm-hmm.
But a great finish, to be fair, to Ikoné.
Yeah, yeah.
But a bit of a shot in the ribs to Valencia, who were holding on.
It is. And I think Valencia has, ever since they fired their coach, they have really been trying to find themselves for a while, even in La Liga and everything. And this was a game, in theory, they were supposed to win, because if you look at it, Lille is the weakest team in the group. Well,
yeah.
There's no weak teams in this group, I feel like, specifically. But that is the game that Valencia will be kicking themselves.
Yeah, they would have been looking at that saying, right, if we can get 3 points, this is the game here.
Yeah, yeah, they will definitely be kicking themselves. They might miss those 3 points now. Now, those 3 points that they didn't get might come and bite them, and they might have to go to Europa League now because they missed that opportunity. Because you said they were winning, and in the 95th minute, it was a cracker.
Mm-hmm.
It had, like, the goal was unstoppable, not necessarily anyone's fault. It's just Lille was full out offense trying to get that goal.
And sometimes you get that bit of luck too. I mean, sometimes it takes a bit of a deflection off someone, or what, a goalkeeper touches it the wrong way. But you need that bit of luck sometimes. But Lille deserved it.
And they worked for that luck. They put like 5 guys up front. They were like, just score the goal. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. We need that goal. And the group is pretty tight still. Even Lille still has a chance to go through.
It's still pretty open.
It's Chelsea is the first place team with 6 points because they beat Ajax.
Mm-hmm.
Ajax has 6 points as well, and they have the better goal difference. But since Chelsea beat Ajax,
the
head-to-head, yeah. Chelsea goes first. Valencia is third with 4, and Lille has 1 point. So anything can happen. Especially
Lille can still hurt people there.
Lille can hurt people. This inexperienced Chelsea team might start feeling the pressure later. I don't think Ajax will feel any pressure. I think Ajax... For me, Ajax is the safest bet to go through in that group because they've been there, done that. They know what they're doing. They know what they have, and they're just going to keep going at him.
Well, that's it. We've went through them all. Group A to H. I mean, we're going into match day 4 at the start of November, and there's some tasty games as well. I mean, a lot of them will be the reverse game of this. So
there, it is. All of them are the reverse game of this.
So it'll be the likes of Valencia Lille will just be at Valencia then. Mm-hmm. So a lot of teams will be looking for retribution.
Yeah.
Getting back the teams, especially like Lille, who scored in the last minute.
Lille, Lyon.
So they will be thinking about this. Valencia team will be thinking about this for the next, month or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or a couple of weeks anyway. Mm-hmm. Whenever it is. So it's looking like it's starting to heat up, as we said. It's getting to that stage of the Champions League now where separating the men from the boys, so this next match day is going to be crucial.
Yeah. It'll be extremely... This next match day will finally determine... You will see more clearly who goes through and who stays. Like, these next points are super important. Usually, the last match day, everything is already decided.
Yeah.
Rarely is it not.
So that last
match day, usually teams put subs, people who haven't really played there that much. They really try to be already done by the time it gets there.
Well, and I hope that match day is going to be as good and entertaining as this one was. Thank you, Andres, for joining me again. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great as always.
And we'll speak again the next match day, as I said. So the next match day will be the 5th of November. So we'll probably be recording on the 6th then, putting this out just on the Wednesday of the match day too. Tell your friends and family, especially here in the States, if you want to listen to any sort of European football chat, sort of dialogue that you probably wouldn't hear much other place. You can hear it right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Myself and Andreas will be doing these after every match day for the Champions League on the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast. So make sure you get back and join in next time.
If there's anything also you would like us to talk about, hit Connell up on Twitter or any of
Twitter,
the social media.
C-McCourt underscore.
Hit him up and we'll get it in. We'll get it in the show. So give us a call.
That's it. Thank you. Thank you for everybody listening. Thank you, Andreas, for joining me. You've been listening to the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.